I confess to you, if you've looked at the heading of what we're about to read here in verse 12, it's the passage for Palm Sunday, the triumphal entry of Jesus, Palm Sunday events. And I confess to you that every previous time that I've spent any time really working through this passage, either listening to a sermon or preaching one myself or just studying it in my devotional time, the sum total of my response to it was frustration. Because what I used to see in this passage was human beings acting like human beings. In particular, what I used to see was the human tendency to be extremely fickle. And it was my assumption that many of the people who were cheering for Jesus on Friday were the same people who were jeering at Jesus on Sunday. I said that backwards, didn't I? Sunday, cheering. Friday, jeering. You get the idea. It's that fickleness that has left me soured when I read through this and frustrated. But this time, I don't know what the difference was. This time, as I studied through it, I saw something much more encouraging in this passage. And I'd like to try and show you what it is. Let's read through it. And then I'll try and show you what I saw this time for the first time. The next day, the great crowd that had come for the feast heard that Jesus was on his way to Jerusalem. They took palm branches and went out to meet him, shouting, "Hosanna! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the King of Israel." And Jesus mounted a young donkey and sat upon it. As it is written, "Do not be afraid, O daughter of Zion. See, your king is coming, seated on a donkey's colt." At first, his disciples did not understand all this. Only after Jesus was glorified did they realize that these things had been written about him and that they had done these things to him. Now the crowd that was with him when he called Lazarus from the tomb and raised him from the dead continued to spread the word. Many people, because they had heard that he had given this miraculous sign, went out to meet him. So the Pharisees said to one another, "See, this is getting us nowhere. Look how the whole world has gone after him." And editorial remark here, this particular translation obscures the fact that what the Pharisees were engaged in was the blame game. They said, "You are not accomplishing anything." They were pointing their fingers at each other. They didn't say "we," they said "you." And human beings acting like human beings. But there it is. What is it that I've seen? To show you what it is, let's start with the frustrating stuff. Consider with me for a moment to what lengths the religious authorities went to try to put Jesus off where he could not threaten them. They started out by ignoring him. And when that didn't work, they belittled him. They made snide remarks about him and put him down and looked down their noses at him. And when that didn't work, then they tried to logically argue with him. And invariably what he did was out-argue them with their own arguments and turn them around so that it showed that their motives were corrupted and made them look like fools. Well, then they outright opposed him. They tried to trap him in certain ways, and then they opposed him in such a way that people were afraid to speak up for Jesus. Do you remember the man who was born blind? His parents were called before the Sanhedrin and said, or the, you know, the temple authorities, and they said, "Tell us what happened here." And they said, "Well, you ask our son." Why? It says they were afraid of being put out of the synagogue because the priests had said that anyone who spoke up in favor of Jesus and said that he might be the Messiah would be excommunicated, which was a big deal. It was their lifeline to God, the synagogue. And so they were afraid. And so they ramped up these temple authorities, these religious leaders, the Pharisees as well. They ramped up this antagonism. They increased their energy to try and put Jesus back or to hold him down. And when that didn't work, then they tried to incite mobs against him. We read that people picked up stones to throw at Jesus. Well, that didn't just happen. Somebody's in the back of that crowd saying, let's get him, let's get him. And we can be pretty accurate, I think, if we speculate that it was those self-same authorities that were back there doing that. But Jesus escaped from every one of those mobs, and they finally called a meeting and said, we're going to have to arrest him and kill him. Think of the energy that they put into that. Now, at the end, when it became public knowledge that they were going to arrest him and kill him, everybody knew it. The people realized that Jesus had gone too far this time. The hostility that was evident from the authorities, the people that had the clout to kill him, was so high that if he even showed up at Passover, they'd get him. In fact, they had instructed, anybody sees Jesus trying to sneak into the Passover, you got to tell where he is. Remember that? Well, what was Jesus' response to that? He didn't disguise himself and sneak in under cover of darkness. He threw a parade. He came in with a parade. You know, he didn't have a band or anything, but he might just as well have. He came in with a parade. Talk about in your face. My goodness. Everybody said, no, he won't come. There's no way he's going to show up in this environment. And he comes in with a parade, for heaven's sake. Now, it wasn't just that Jesus was thumbing his nose in the face of that hostility at the temple authorities and so forth. That wasn't all it was. This parade simply had to happen. The time was ripe. It was ready. And it was going to happen. Why? Well, we see tucked away in this passage two or three reasons why this celebration simply was going to happen. People cheering and yelling, Hosanna! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Blessed is the King of Israel. This was no liturgy, although it was commonly used, you know, Psalm 118 and so forth. This went beyond that when they started identifying him as the King of Israel. And we'll remember, as we think back through John and the other Gospels, that there were time after time that the people that knew what Jesus was doing tried to get hold of him and make him their king. Remember that? And Jesus would have nothing to do with it. But now, he was accepting their acclamation. And the crowd went nuts. And there was nothing that anybody could do to stop it. It had to happen because it simply is the case that you cannot continuously, forever, keep a lid on bottled up hopes. You just can't do it. You remember the frustrating years prior to 2001, as the Colorado Avalanche went into the playoffs year after year after year, with better roster year after year after year, and we said, well, this is going to be the year. And every year in the playoffs, they would crumble and fail. And then they brought Ray Bourque in. Remember that? And Ray Bourque says, I want to join the Avalanche because I've got one more year to go for the Stanley Cup and I really want to win it this year. And everybody kind of rallied around Ray. And as the season progressed, it looked like it really might happen this time. And people who had bottled up their hopes allowed them to kind of slip out just a little bit, a little pressure valve leaking out. And they get into the playoffs, and sure enough, they look like they're going to crumble. But hope against hope, they score in the final game, and they win in the playoffs. They go to the Stanley Cup, and they take it right down to the wire in the cup and win. Remember that? Did you go to Denver for the parade? The place, it just shut the city down. Everywhere you look, people standing hundreds deep, just up on the balls of their feet, craning to see their heroes as they came down the street, riding on the cars. You know, there's Ray, there's Raw. Don't you love saying that? Raw. Forsberg, there he is, Joe Sakic, wow, and the place was going nuts. Can you imagine, they wouldn't have done it, but can you imagine if the city fathers had tried to stop that parade? They would have been just ignored. It had to happen. Because you cannot keep a lid on bottled up hopes forever. And Jerusalem, and in fact all of Israel, was waiting year after year, generation after generation, for the promised Messiah. They knew he was going to come. But when, in Jesus' day, the anticipation for the Messiah was at a fever pitch. And already some pretenders to that position had come and been exposed as frauds. And people were just looking for the Messiah. And they were eager for the conquering king to come and release Israel from the oppression of the Romans. And here comes Jesus riding in on the symbol of kingly authority, coming as a conquering hero in peace. A donkey. That's what that meant. For him to ride in on that donkey was he was the conquering hero king coming in peace. And the crowd went nuts. It had to happen. You could not keep the lid on those bottled up hopes any longer. But there was it was more than that. In verse 14, the last four words say, "As it is written." And the second reason that John wants us to know that this parade had to happen is because God had promised it. And you cannot hold back what God has written down. You just can't do it. He was referring back to this prophecy in Zechariah. It says, "Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout, daughter of Jerusalem. See, your king comes to you, righteous and having salvation, gentle and riding on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey." Can you imagine when Jesus had been resurrected? He gets the disciples together. We know he did this. And I don't know whether they had a written copy or whether somebody who knew the word there or whatever it was. He pointed to these words that we just read. And it's as though, you know, he said, "John, remember that day when I rode into town on a donkey? Think about it." And can you imagine the dismay, the sense of dawning awe and wonder in John as he looked at those words and put the facts together with what they had unknowingly done that day. And realize that that parade simply had to happen because God wrote it down. It was a promise. It was going to happen. And there was nothing that the authorities could do to stop it. And then in verse 17, it says that the crowd that was with him when he called Lazarus continued to spread the word. The people that saw Lazarus get up, the people that knew that Lazarus was dead and now he was alive, they knew that the authorities said, "Stop talking about Jesus." But they couldn't stop talking about Jesus because they'd seen Lazarus dead and now he was alive. And there is no way that you can smother the truth forever with a lie. It's going to get out. When people have seen the truth, they've experienced it for themselves, they're going to tell somebody. You cannot legislate that away. Governments forever have been trying to do this and failing. You're trying to swamp the truth or smother it with a lie. It just doesn't work. Remember those exciting, heady days just before the Berlin Wall came down in, what was that, 87 or 89 or something like that? 89. Remember just before that happened? You know, for decades, the East German frowny-faced authorities had been, you know, this gray, dead thing trying to keep truth and light out of East Germany. Keep everything bottled up inside and trying to preach the message that if you go out there, you'll be corrupted by freedom and really communism is the way and so forth. And people were hopping over that thing and getting shot in the process. But just before that wall came down, when the truth had leaked out from underneath that blanket of a lie, people were just, they just didn't care. And they were hoisting one another up over the wall in a brazen fashion, and the authorities gave up. And then the wall came down. Remember that? You cannot smother truth with a lie. You can't do it. That parade had to happen. There was no getting around it. It had to happen because you cannot bottle up and put a lid on hopes forever. It had to happen because God wrote it down. It was going to happen. And you cannot hold back what God has written. And it had to happen because you cannot smother the truth with a lie. Well, that's what I saw the last time I looked at this passage. And then I got thinking about, well, wait a minute. What's our situation? We live in a world that's getting darker, don't we? We live in a world filled with human beings that act like human beings. We live in a world where everything gets corrupted. We're under the grip of sin in this world. We are. I mean, you can get scientists together to invent the internet so they can communicate with one another and solve puzzling diseases once and for all and invent new stuff. And within days, somebody figures out that the internet is a great vehicle to spread pornography. You can get officials together and say, I know what let's do. Let's house these people in the Superdome. And within hours, you get gangs of thugs beating people up and killing them over lunch. You know, this is a dark world we're in. And we've got authorities who have taken it upon themselves to try to stop us from talking about Jesus. So how do we respond? We hear Christians say, you know what? We ought to be more courageous. We ought to shine the light better. We ought to get together and do something. And that's good, but this is not good. There's a parade coming. There is a parade coming. Get ready. Get ready. Because they can't stop it. They can't stop it. We win. You know, when Jesus came in on that donkey, somewhere in that crowd, somebody looked over and they said, oh man, look what's happening. Somebody was the first one to take out his leatherman and run over to the palm tree and cut off a branch and start waving it excitedly. Somebody was the first one to take off his cloak and lay it down before Jesus. They knew they were in trouble when they did that. They knew that if nobody else did it, they'd be hustled off. But somebody in that crowd was the first one to fill up her lungs and yell, Hosanna! Blessed be the name of the one who's coming in the name of the Lord. Blessed be the King of Israel. And the crowd went nuts, right? Because a parade is coming. And they couldn't stop it. You can't put a lid on bottled up hopes. And the fact is that every single one of us in this room who has genuinely come to faith in Jesus Christ knows for a fact that there is hope there. You can see it, and they can't put a lid on that. You can't smother truth with a lie. And every single one of us in this room who has come to life in Jesus and knows that that life grows day after day. It's like a well of water, a spring that comes up and bubbling over with new life every day. In season, out season, in crisis, in comforting times, whatever it is, it just keeps coming. And we know that's true, and they can't stop that with a lie. You can't say, well, all religions are the same, and we must be tolerant because it says tolerance in the Constitution. And can't do that. That's nonsense. It's a lie. And the truth is going to get out because one of you is going to run over and cut a palm. One of you is going to tell her neighbor, hey, you know what? That's a lie. I can tell you the truth. And Jesus said, there's going to be one more parade. It's written. can't stop. And this time, he's not coming on a donkey. Coming on the clouds. Lord, haste the day when I have faith to be sight. Lord, shall descend and the trump will sound. And every knee will bow. Every tongue will confess. One day. Whether out of faith or out of frustration, he really is the Lord. As the parade's coming, get ready. Get ready.